RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val, and...
Beans! Today, we have an interview coming up in just a few minutes with Jason Fick. And I don't know, many people haven't heard of Jason, but he actually has a Section 230 case sitting in front of the Supreme Court right now.
Yeah.
And
it's good.
It is good. And I mean, it's very complicated. But I really implore everybody to sit down and listen to this interview and try and rewind it a little bit if you just don't grasp something at first, because it's deep, but it's in front of the Supreme Court and it literally will remedy 230 so that things are good again. And he explains how. Is that a good synopsis?
Absolutely. And I think it adds more depth to the situation. It's very complex. But it's good that he presented how complex of a situation it is, because I think that in the public sphere right now, the whole Section 230 thing has been reduced to great simplicity, to this whole
publisher, not publisher.
Yeah, publisher, not publisher, and we need to get rid of 230.
Yeah,
from what I've been able to read myself, that is a very, very, very reductive. So I think he goes into some good stuff here.
Yeah, and there's going to be an article by him linked in the show notes that you guys should all read. Before we get to that, though, and it's going to be a little bit of a shortened show today because of scheduling and all kinds of other nonsense, but flash came across this morning while we were just talking to Jason. Pentagon halts Biden transition briefings.
Really?
Acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller ordered a Pentagon-wide halt to cooperation with the transition of President-elect Biden, shocking officials across the Defense Department. Behind the scenes, a top Biden official was unaware of the directive. Administration officials left open the possibility that cooperation would resume after a holiday pause. The officials were unsure what prompted Miller's action or whether President Trump approved. Why it matters? Miller's move, which stunned officials throughout the Pentagon, was the biggest eruption yet of animus and mistrust toward the Biden team from the top level of the Trump administration.
And that is, you know, today is the was the official executive order threshold, the 18th, 45 mm-hmm. days after.
Yes.
So for that to come.
It's something. It's something.
Oh, yeah. Wowee. Breaking, huh? I didn't know that.
There's a lot of people out there that are saying there's absolutely no way. It's over. There's certification now. It's not happening. I'm telling you, today at 1 o'clock Eastern time or 12 o'clock Eastern time, there will be a hearing in Arizona. Why? Because these election officials and the Board of Supervisors in Maricopa County have refused to follow this subpoena for the Dominion machines and vote images. And they are actually, from what I'm reading, considering indicting some of these people for failing to follow the subpoena for these machines.
Well, I really, really hope that something amazing happens here.
It says possible action regarding discussion related to election litigation and other related election matters. Take action as directed in the December 18, 2020 executive session regarding election litigation and other election-related election matters. This is what they're sitting for today. RSBN will have it today. Did it start yet? No, in an hour it's going to start. So it'll start at 12 o'clock Eastern time, which is 2.5 hours before we go live. So there's that. And there's more, Frank. I pass this along to the proper people. I want to send a huge, huge shout out to Daniel Babinski, author at UncoverDC.com. He came to me with the story. I said, Daniel, I said, get this up on the site yesterday. It is titled California Clearly Voted Election Law. Votes are invalid. In sum and substance, with all of the proof being available in physical form, we'll put it that way and say no more. In 53 of 58 of California's counties, the ballots were printed against the law. They don't include words, phrases, and statements that are required by California law in no uncertain terms to be on them. And the law dictates that those ballots shall not be cast or counted in any election.
Well, this is amazing.
This literally means that 100% of California's voting was conducted in complete violation of its own state election laws.
It's an amazing update. What do you think, though?
Well, I mean, this is so clear. Like, that we put the election code in there. We have a few pictures of some ballots, but there are more we have, by the way. And it's a cut and dry case. I mean, look, what Daniel says here is it's very much true. You'll agree with it, I'm sure. If the United States is to be a country governed by laws, none of the ballots from California should have been cast or counted. It's right there in California state code. Thus, all of California's ballots are invalid. They cannot be officially counted in the state's vote totals, and California's electoral college votes must be invalidated. Naturally, some will say, oh, come on, it's just a technicality. Yep, and in 2016, a man named Donald Clark committed a home invasion that resulted in the death of a 77-year-old man. But Clark's confession to the crime was later considered void because Clark didn't fully understand his Miranda rights when he waived them and confessed. Thus, a killer was set free on a technicality. In other words, technicalities matter. The question remains, are we a nation governed by laws or aren't we? And then he says this. On January 6th, when the Electoral College votes are unsealed in our nation's capital, someone with integrity in the United States Congress needs to challenge California's 55 electoral votes, as well as Pennsylvania's 20. If California and Pennsylvania, which there's more, but this is what he was focused on in this article. If California and Pennsylvania's votes are not challenged and denied, we are no longer a nation governed by laws, but a nation ruled by tyrants who disregard the law. And if that happens, Americans will need to decide once again if that's the kind of government they want.
Now, when are we going to get action on that? I heard, I saw Sidney Powell complaining about how her emergency filings here are being slow walked, and that she's looking at dates of January 14th now. And there's definitely an effort to really just, I don't know, make it all go away. What do you think?
I mean, we've said this since the beginning. If the courts don't act, it stinks. It would be much better if they did. But the responsibility is constitutionally. Now, these state legislatures can recertify. They can take their plenary power back, which is power granted to them without question, and recertify the electors in their states the right way. Should more evidence get, like, so there's still so many things that can happen. And judging from, you know, some of the vocalness. Now, Tuberville is coming out and saying that he's going to challenge at the Electoral College. But there are still things that can happen before then. It is. Listen, if you've learned anything so far, as fast as 2 weeks goes, it's still a very long time in terms of the content of how much information comes out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, especially when you really think about and remind yourself that the date that we're really keeping in focus is Inauguration Day.
Yeah.
All these safe harbor dates, certification dates, whatever. The only date that is mentioned in the Constitution is
January 20th.
That's it.
Yep. So there's that. And then there's all this vaccine stuff we'll quickly talk about before we end. This stuff is there. The woman yesterday. Did you see this nurse? Now
the one that passed out.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I don't know what the hell it's all about. Maybe she was just spooked by the media. I don't know.
She seemed pretty confident. I don't know either. And she said this happens to her all the time. And that's the kind of nurse I want. That passes out all the time at the mere sight of something.
Oh man.
So she gets the vaccine. She's giving a press conference. She's interviewing with the press about how great the vaccine is. And all of a sudden, she's like, I don't feel so good. And she passes out right after getting the vaccine. This is totally not what we wanted to see.
Not only, a good look.
No, not only that, but there was another CBS a local affiliate of CBS did some really great investigating, and they determined that one of the nurses in, I don't know where it was. I think
UMC.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the completely depressed plunger of the needle.
Yes, that they didn't actually get the vaccine, and they identified it, and the hospital came out and, oh, this was a mishap. We gave the nurse the vaccine later. What? How does it? What?
A second dose.
Yeah, I know.
Oh man, I just oh God, stay away from it all.
Anyway,
California, though, I knew, you know, listen, something's going on out there with California. There was so much. Once again, it's one of those places where you say maybe it doesn't go red, but I can see the margin of victory for Democrats in California, at least in a presidential sense, starting to become razor thin instead of inflated. And all of a sudden, they added millions to their vote counts. Millions. You know, California is the place where they pretty much get their popular vote win every year now.
Yeah,
that there's an
literally
election,
they call it like noon the day of election.
Yeah, so I'm sure that there's something really awful going on out there.
Well, look, they didn't print this language on their ballots. That's very clearly you need to have on your ballots. And people over there have been screaming about this. And let's just say all the stuff got to the right place. We'll see what happens. I mean, this article, I've never seen anything like this before, where I tweeted this article and like less than 20 minutes later, it already had like 10,000 retweets on it. It was crazy. And we also got yesterday all of these unredacted text messages, Strzok and Page text messages.
I haven't seen these.
Oh my gosh. I wish we had more time. Monday. Because the people that leaked about General Flynn, we learn in these text messages, the Strzok Page text messages that were now given out, that it was Strzok and McCabe that leaked to the WAPO about General Flynn. Mm-hmm.
Strzok and McCabe.
Yep.
So can McCabe go to jail for the rest of his life yet?
Well, can somebody go to jail? Please?
Jeez, man.
Anyone? Can you put anyone in jail? Anyway, without further ado, Frank, here's Jason Fick.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So we are joined today by a gentleman I met a few years ago named Jason Fick, who is actually in front of the Supreme Court right now with a Section 230 case against Facebook, of all places. And Jason, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tracy, for having me.
That's great. So tell us, I guess, tell everybody what happened to you with Facebook and why you decided to sue.
Well, years ago, I jumped onto Facebook and I decided, you know what, I'm going to build an audience. And, you know, like everybody else does, except this was 2010. And I built a fairly large audience. At one time, our estimates were about 38 million fans. So I had a larger audience than usual. Actually, matter of fact, at one point, I was larger than BuzzFeed cumulatively. And in the midst of that, you know, we were doing, you know, essentially ad marketing and so forth. And Facebook came in as a competitor to all of ours. And when they did that as an advertiser, they needed to find a way to get rid of us, right, over the time. So they started creating, I'm sure everybody remembers, spam, clickbait, and all the other excuses as to why to remove content. Now, many of us understand that because under Section 230, C2A, they can restrict materials that are considered offensive. The question there is spam, is clickbait, is all that truly offensive? So what ended up happening is that over the years, they basically offered us, you know, the distribution and so forth online, but then they wanted to take it back and they basically wanted to silence everybody. Now, this was before people recognized it as censoring. It was more that it was just an economic, challenge for them to get rid of us. Right.
What were you posting?
So
what were you posting? Like
just
what
fun content? Yeah, we were doing memes and fun stuff and so forth.
Non-political,
really,
right?
It wasn't political at all. I only ever had one political page, and that was in 2012, and it was an anti-Obama for president page. Coincidentally enough, it was actually deleted on the night before the election. About a million fans gone. Poof. No fanfare, no media, no nothing, right? The thing was, back then, it was mostly a younger audience that was on Facebook, so nobody really paid attention to it. They didn't think it was any kind of weapon. You know, they didn't think what it is today. I did. I recognized immediately that they could actually affect elections. They could affect anything that they chose to affect. Now, doesn't seem fair, does it?
Well, so, obviously
long
not.
Long story short, 2016, I come in and I start pushing hard for Trump. I've been a huge Trump supporter since day one. And now I will say that my argument is not political. Even though I was supporting Trump, they decided to come in and then they said they wiped out thousands of pages in October of 2016. And the intention there was essentially to shut everybody up to try and sway an election. They didn't do enough. If you recall, Mark Zuckerberg sat in front of Congress and he said, it was my fault. I take responsibility. Yeah, because he screwed up. He let them get ahead of him. And what happens is the citizen journalists, like you, Tracy, you have more power than these monster media networks. That's what happened with social media, because we trust our individuals more. I trust my friends more than I trust anything at this point. No mainstream media, forget it, right? But I would sooner trust a friend, and that's what we were. We were friends amongst social media. Well, 2016, they decided, well, they're going to shut down six of my pages, 14 million fans. I guess I was rushing disinformation or somehow, in some way, I was offensive or objectionable. Well, the thing was, I then caught them red-handed because, and here's what happened. Five months later, give or take, I went to a colleague, an old colleague of mine, who was running a competitive business, who had spent tons of money, $22 million in advertising with Facebook. They literally had reps that physically worked with them. So I asked him, I said, hey, can you see if they'll restore my pages? And they did, and they asked. And sure enough, Facebook said, no, not for Jason Fick. But if the other company were to own those pages, they would restore it for them. Fair, right?
So then it's not the content, it's you.
Exactly. It was prima facie evidence that it had nothing to do with the content. But in order to ram this thing home, I knew. I mean, what value is unpublished pages? Exactly zero. So I sold them the pages, all of the pages. And 3 days after the contracts were signed, all of the content. And some people, they go down this road because one guy decided to go on a fact that Facebook put out there that I had a page dedicated to your name public. It was 100% false. It was a page called Take a Piss Funny in the UK or Australia that just, it's a humorous page. And not only that, but it was actually a transcription issue. Wasn't even my page. Flat lie. Judges still latched onto it. So did the public. It's wrong. 100% fake news, et cetera. Anyhow, long and short it was, my content was never really offensive. I mean, here and there, we put some racy stuff, but everybody does. But it's not systemically problematic, I guess you could say, or offensive. So anyhow, whatever it was restored. It just mattered who owned it. Now, that's interesting because that's really what they're doing is they're curating content. We all know that they're doing it. I mean, they even say that they're doing it. But I found the flaw, essentially the fly in the ointment here. Section 230 has been obviously up in arms forever. In 2018, I decided to sue. Now, this is not a small endeavor. You don't go into this going, oh, I'm just going to sue one of the largest companies in the world and retire, you know, comfortably. It's going to be easy. No, I knew that I was basically going to lose in California because California has been just completely covering them. The Northern District and the Ninth Circuit, just they don't care. Now, we've done that. Northern District dismissed it. Ninth Circuit dismissed it. And this is where we're going to get into a little bit of higher level conversation about this. This is why we figured out the problem. Excuse me. So the Ninth Circuit said, and I'm just going to forget about the Northern District for the moment, because essentially the Ninth Circuit confirmed what the Northern District said.
So just to clarify for everyone, the Ninth Circuit is the appeals court above the first court you sued in. Right. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, correct. We went to the Northern District of California. They dismissed it on 230C1 grounds. Let's make sure we understand it. Not 230C2A, but C1. Because we destroyed the C2A argument. The restricting materials in good faith. How can you say it's good faith if they just restored it based upon who pays the more? It's impossible.
So can you quickly say what that section of 230 says exactly so that people know?
Well, I'm not only going to say what it says, but I'm going to explain what it means, what everybody has missed in that, 24 years that it's been around. Everybody made a textual mistake. So did the Ninth Circuit. And that's where we figured out the flaw, and it's fixable. Here's why. The Ninth Circuit Court said that I was treating Facebook as a publisher or speaker of the content of another, being my own content, right? So therefore, I can't treat them as a publisher under 230C1, because 230C1 says no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of the content of another. Seems right, doesn't it? But it's not. Here's why. If I'm treating them as a publisher, right, and I can't treat them as a publisher, restricting materials is something a publisher does, correct?
Yeah.
It's an action that they would do. Restriction is something that's in C2A. If you can't treat them as a publisher, then what's the purpose of C2A? Because it becomes superfluous. It's useless.
Well, what,
it's like saying to somebody, think about it this way. If you said to somebody, you can't make a left-hand turn down here, but the first law says you can't drive in general, what's the purpose of the second law?
Understood. But I think that what most people don't know are these subsections that you're talking about.
Correct. Correct. Well, I'm giving an overview, and it's going to have to be, I mean, the people that are going to really understand this are going to be lawyers. But the point is that if the second portion of the law, C2A, which is the restriction portion, is a publisher function and the first one would otherwise render it useless, it can't be right.
Understood. It contradicts itself.
Bingo. Exactly. The Supreme Court doesn't want us to have redundancies or repetitions, and that they say that every word is important, Tracy. Every word. Okay? Here's where it gets great. I was watching actually Judge Napolitano. I'd love to get in touch with him actually. But Judge Napolitano was asking a law class of his what the most important word in the right to free speech is. Class didn't know. Now he went on to say that James Madison once argued in the Federalist Papers that the word the was the most important word, the right to free speech. The denotes that the right preexisted. It was just there. Therefore, no abridgment could have happened because it was already the right. Right? And all of a sudden, the light bulb went off. The law does not say a publisher. 230C1 says no provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of the content of another. In other words, the actions of another publisher, the first original publisher.
Meaning you.
Now, meaning the person, whoever put it there.
Right.
Treated as them. It doesn't mean that they can't be a publisher, because that would be a secondary publisher in addition to the publisher.
Wow, this is really technical. So this is why basically you got to where you are, because of a, the, and a, basically.
Yeah,
exactly. And what happened is a cascade of mistakes, because the Ninth Circuit was having problems with the confliction, you know, where there's a redundancy. So what the Ninth Circuit said was that 230C2A provides a separate grant of immunity because... get this, perhaps because they developed information in part, end quote. And they quoted Batzel. The crazy part there is that is the exact language. Sorry if this is getting technical, but 230F3, the actual language of an a content provider is any person or entity who is responsible in whole or in part, minimally, for the creation or development of information online. It's the exact language of it. So now what's happened is the Ninth Circuit has basically closed the loop. 230C1 protects you from any publishing action, and 230C2 now protects you for information content provision, which it doesn't. It's wrong. It's all been a textual mistake. And the thing is that, okay, here's this guy. You don't know him. You're listening to him on Tracy Beam's show right now, right? Well, I'm not the only one that agreed with this position. Do you know who else did? Justice Clarence Thomas himself. On October 13th, he did something that was absolutely unprecedented, and there was virtually no media about it. In a denial of cert in the Enigma versus Malwarebytes case, where Enigma had won over Malwarebytes on 230 grounds, they had actually beaten 230 because the Ninth Circuit in one other case decided that they actually recognized that motivation matters. 230C says that they have to be a good Samaritan. If they're not a good Samaritan, we don't even need to look at the rest of it.
So basically, arguing that Malwarebytes was not a good Samaritan in whatever they did to cancel the other? And
yes. It was antitrust animus, they said. Antitrust motivation.
Who determines good Samaritans?
Well, that's just it, is that now we have to get into motivation matters. But here's the kicker. the Mauerbytes appealed it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court denied cert on it. But then Justice Clarence Thomas did something that's unprecedented. He rendered a statement that was like 7 pages long explaining his position on 230. And he says that without the benefits of briefs and record, that he can't really go into it. But everything he said substantively was entirely my argument, all of it. In fact, he actually identifies the publisher as the primary publisher and a publisher as a secondary publisher. There's where the confusion sets in. You can be treated as a publisher, but you cannot be treated as the publisher. They're two separate things.
So
though they're both publishers.
Stop just for a second. Okay. So when you're saying a publisher, the publisher, when you speak of a publisher, you're talking about Facebook.
A publisher is anybody who takes an action to do anything of publishing function.
The publisher?
Meaning, curation, fact-checking, developing, taking money. Think about this. Taking money to post content, increase the distribution of sponsored ads, means that they're developing information in part, does it not? I mean, they're taking money for it and they're putting it out there. The thing is that when they do that, they become a publisher providing content and therefore displacing users like you and me. They're on the hook for everything.
It's confusing. And it is very technical, the minutiae that you can get on into with this. It really creates – it actually drives home why there has been such a opportunity for platforms to do whatever the hell they want with censoring right. Americans. My question to you is the same question I have posed to the audience, our audience, my own audience and all that. That is this. Outside of everybody saying we should get rid of 230, I've read some really compelling arguments as to why getting rid of it would actually be even worse. How would you tailor 230 to put an end to the problems that we have right now while maintaining free and open internet for people to publish what they want and engage in public discourse or even disinformation, you know,
that's an excellent question, Frank. Excellent question. And here's why. There's an answer for this that's very impactful. Okay. Repealing, eliminating, or terminating 230 would be a disaster because, and here's why. Section 230 was actually brought into play because of a very specific reason. In 1996, they came out with this big blue book of smut, right? And the idea was that they said, man, there's going to be bad stuff on the internet. We have to be able to provide these sites some way to remove that content if they're acting as a good Samaritan in good faith. Like, hey, let's save the internet, right? That was the intent. And that's what 230C2A was. They said, hey, look, you can remove that content in good faith. Now, they haven't been doing it in good faith, but the thing is they keep kicking to a 230C1 argument, which is the publisher issue. So I'm trying to solve that. But now here's the kicker, okay? If you repeal it, the problem was is that when you remove any content on a site, you become liable for all of the content on the site. That was the purpose of 230C1. So effectively what happens is that if you repeal it, it means they would be responsible for not removing everything and everything on their site simultaneously. It would destroy everything. And not only that, but here's the thing. Large companies will be able to probably endure the lawsuits. Small companies will not. Meaning, if you repeal, eliminate, or terminate 230, as some of these congressmen and even the president, he's wrong on this one. Now, we all know the president, he sometimes overreaches because he's going for a different goal, but that's his brilliance. The point here is it's not even a partisan argument. It's a textual misunderstanding. And if we fix the textual misunderstanding and the Supreme Court is the one to do it, then what happens is 230 resolves the issues. Because now what happens is, in this circumstance, they could be treated as a publisher, not the publisher, a publisher for their own actions. Thus, they would be responsible for fact-checking now. They would be responsible for their advertising programs that displace their own users. But the thing is then the arguments can't come as a 230C1 argument in court. They have to come as a 230C2 argument. And guess what? That has a measure of good faith. And then you have to go back and you go, wait a second. What about Enigma case? Oh, that's right. Motivation matters. So at the threshold, this is the test that would happen, right? The first thing they would ask in the courts is, were they acting as a good Samaritan? Was the purpose of this lawsuit, does it show that there was evidence that they were not acting as a good Samaritan? If they were, then they would pass 230C. If not, case moves on to trial.
So basically, if Facebook were to remove conservative under this scenario we're talking about right now, if Facebook were to remove
repeal or fixing it,
fixing
which scenario? Fixing it. Okay, yeah. So if 230 was reamend and basically fixed textually this scenario. Okay.
Yes. So if that was the case and it was fixed textually, so it was understandable, and the scenario that you're talking about rolled out where they removed a piece of conservative content purely mm-hmm. because they were being biased, not because of any right. other reason, and somebody could prove that, that's where their liability would fall in. Whereas now they're using the protection of 230 the way it's written to shield themselves from any of that.
Okay, correct. So let me give you a scenario, right? Say you're Facebook and you remove something of mine that was conservative based. Remember, my argument is not conservative based. It is purely nonpartisan. It is a textual mistake, needs to be fixed. End of story. And my argument was actually economic. But say they remove something, you know, it's just conservative based because they don't want to see it, right? Right now, you would go in and you say you would sue and you would say, look, 230C2A doesn't apply because you didn't do it in good faith. Well, the courts would, they would come back and do exactly what they did to me, which is they would sue or they would look for a 12B6 dismissal under 230C1 and say, you can't treat me as a publisher. And you go, wait a second, then what was the purpose of 230C2A? Because that's what you did. It can't treat me as a publisher. And we're saying, no, I can treat you as a publisher after this. So it only applies to Good Samaritan now, which then, yes, then there is an issue of, can you prove that it was done as a bad Samaritan? That's not working in courts right now. And most people don't realize it because they haven't sued. We did. We've already hit the problem. You know, I stood up, 4 years ago, and basically put my entire world on the line for this one. I think we're about to fix it.
So if they fix
it, motivation will matter at that point.
Yeah. So your case, although economic and not, you know, political, we get that, but this would obviously blanket every kind of case that could possibly be brought. And it's not to say that they would self-police and change their behavior for argument's sake. It's just to say that there'd be a legal remedy at that point. So you're in front of the Supreme Correct. Court right now arguing the difference between the and a, which will make such a big difference in the interpretation of Section 230. They accepted your cert and they're actually going to hear this case. You're doing oral arguments, correct?
We have not been accepted yet. And what's interesting is the deafening silence from mainstream media. Deafening silence from Congress. Nobody is paying attention to this. And this is the actual remedy to Section 230 that would work.
Did they docket you?
We are on the docket 20-632.
Okay. So you're on the docket,
So we filed a petition for writ of certiorari.
Yeah.
Okay. And Facebook had 30 days to respond. They failed to respond.
They
passed the deadline.
Which is amazing.
That's telling. Yes, that's telling. That's because if they were to go in there and argue with us, they would actually be arguing with Justice Thomas because, like I said, he rendered an interesting opinion on that denial of cert. But the other thing he said in there, that which is incredibly important, is he said in the 24 years that the CDA has been around, it's never been interpreted by the Supreme Court. And at the end, he went on to say that the Enigma case was not the appropriate case to handle this, but if the appropriate case were to come along, it would be in the behest of the Supreme Court to handle it. He welcomed us in there. 2 weeks later, we filed our cert. So we did something that's almost impossible, but we actually quoted Justice Clarence Thomas himself in our own cert.
That's so smart.
Because he's asking the same question.
Yep. Mm. Yep.
He's literally asking the same thing we're asking, going, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense, people.
So now what's next? What's next on the docket here?
We're waiting to hear from the Supreme Court, and I'm kind of wondering why nobody is bringing any kind of attention to this, because we need the Supreme Court to fix this. I don't know. I mean, the Supreme Court's all up in arms right now. I mean, there's a mess going on. I'm just hoping. I mean, this is a matter of global importance. If we fix Section 230, we will fix so much of the Internet. And I've spoken with a couple legislatures. And in doing so, they asked me, well, what would be the remedy at that point? I said, well, first off, the Supreme Court will fix 99% of Section 230. It will resolve most of the problem. Now, that's a longer, you know, conversation and argument how it will resolve it, like, you know, because it's projection. But essentially, they would have to be good Samaritans again. It would really, you know, handcuff what they could do to us. But the thing is what needs to be done legislatively is, what is good Samaritan? What is good faith? The FTC or the FCC should set guidelines as to what those things are after we've fixed or, concurrently with us fixing the actual textual problem.
You know, or they could
we'll fix it.
They can always just decide to. Facebook, basically, over the past 6 months or so, has absolved themselves of Section 230 protections in a lot of ways by changing the way they do business and almost basically saying, we're not even going to bother with this anymore. We're just going to do what we want and not even use 230 as an, you know what I mean? Like, so it, they
because
can change their.
230C1 is effectively giving them 100% immunity. It's carte blanche. If you cannot treat them as a publisher, essentially all of the things that you would normally be able to sue a normal newsstand or normal newspaper for, you cannot sue anyone on the internet because 230C1 is blanket immunity. It's 100% immunity from everything. Yeah. And that's what we're about to rip away.
So I know that it's super complicated out there, guys, and I get it. But what I'm going to do, Jason, is link your cert below the show notes here for people to read, because I was reading through it and, you know, you've been texting me for months and I'm always spread into 70,000 different directions, but I have been looking at this stuff. And, you know, it's important, especially
now. It's literally vital to America. And I don't understand why Congress and nobody else is dragging me in there going, well, here's the issue. Here's how we fixed it. No, let's just blow the whole thing up. No, don't blow it up. Don't repeal it. Don't eliminate it or terminate it. Let the Supreme Court do what it does best, which is fix the problem of legal interpretations. It was never been done in the Supreme Court. We need them to do it. That's what we really need.
So let's pretend, because we got a few minutes. So I just want to run through a scenario with you for everybody out there.
Sure.
Let's pretend that you're successful. They interpret it the way that you've asserted thus far. And that goes on the books. Slam the gavel down. Now, I am a, you know, random person with a million followers on my page or even 1,000 followers on my page. And I post content that Facebook deems they don't like because of whatever reason. Like, let's say I publish an article on Uncover DC and I share it on my Facebook page and they fact check it and take it down. But it's factually true.
Okay.
What remedy, given your new amended version of 230, would I have then as a person to rectify that?
Okay. Ready? I'm going to blow your mind. What if I told you just at the threshold of fact-checking ends. All of it ends. Here's why. Remember what I said, 230F3, it gives us the definition of what an information content provider is, not an interactive computer service provider, right? That's the difference between essentially a platform and a content provider. So a content provider is any person or entity, right? Every word's important. So let's walk through this. Entity. Facebook's an entity, right?
Yep.
That is responsible in whole or in part. So if they're responsible, even in part, meaning a very, very low threshold of responsibility, right? If they're just remotely responsible for the creation or development of information provided online. Okay. So it can be either creation, which is bringing content into existence, or development, which is to manipulate or to modify or to advance or to make available. I mean, just go to Webster's Dictionary. Development is a very broad word. It's just as broad as objectionable, believe it or not. So now, taking that for what it's worth, an entity responsible in part for development or creation. Everybody understands creation. Oh, Facebook didn't make it, so they're not responsible. Wrong. If they are responsible for its development too. Also, remember I told you that the Supreme Court said perhaps because they developed information in part, that's wrong. If we split that back out again, guess what? Now, if they manipulate content in any way, now let's go through fact check, right? Facebook identifies misinformation. Are they responsible for identifying it? Yes or no?
No. Well, yes, of course. Obviously, in the act of doing it, yes.
I'm going to give you very, very, very easy questions.
Yeah.
Are they responsible in part for identifying it? Yes. Then they send it to their third-party fact-checkers who they are partnered with. I think that's funny because that's an oxymoron. The third-party, but they're partnered, right? So they, if they're a partner, are they responsible in part? It's literally the root of the word.
Well, couldn't someone argue though that? But couldn't someone argue though that because they're not physically changing the content that was posted, that they're not?
Guess. Let me get to the end.
All right.
So all makes sense at the end. Are they then if they're responsible in part? So if they're a partner, right? They send it off to these fact checkers, and the fact checker brings content into existence. Do they not?
Because they create an article content. To explain. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. They create content. And then what does they do? They send it back to Facebook, and Facebook posts it and smashes it all over yours, right?
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Well, isn't that literally the definition of development? To make it available, viewable, modified? Do they modify your thing? Do they shade it out?
Yeah, they actually literally modify what I've posted.
So if Facebook is paying a company to create content in part, and then develop it by making it available, are they not an entity responsible in whole or in part, if not at whole, for the creation and development of the information?
Wow.
So they are legally liable at this point for all of fact checking, all of it.
Which is probably why
threshold to your question, yes, you can sue.
That's probably why Candace Owens was so successful in her push.
No. See, there's the thing. I've talked to Todd McMurtry. Todd McMurtry, by the way, actually posted and said that this is probably the way to beat this thing. He's put it out there as well. But they sued only the fact checkers. They did not sue Facebook. They obviously didn't go that direction. Now, the reason being is because if you can sue the fact checker because they are responsible for the creation, but everybody's missing development. Development is only the manipulation of content. And as of right now, development has been swallowed by C2A incorrectly.
Wow,
again,
this is pretty.
That's the second part of my fix.
This is pretty amazing. What do you think, Frank?
Yeah. I wish that maybe we can just be a part of any little effort to bring some much needed media attention to what's coming up next in the fight, because this is the most technical explanation of all this stuff, at least of the path going forward, that I've ever heard. So many people just reduce it to the whole thing to we got to get rid of 230 and that's it.
No.
And you don't even have a conversation as to why that may or may not be worse than what we have right now. But this is I'm glad that someone like you is doing the heavy lifting, and it's crazy how all this is really just coming down to the definition of one or two words.
Yep.
You know, it always
That's
is
exactly
that way.
Exactly it. Yep. It's a misinterpretation of the words themselves and the application of it by the lower courts. And there are dozens and dozens of cases that all overlap with some parts being right, some parts being wrong, and everybody quoting things incorrectly. And it's just a mess. Realistically, we need a super precedent. We need the Supreme Court to throw out every lower case and say, this is how it functions.
Yeah.
And if they do that, guess what? Then all of the courts have to go one road, and that's it. And I will say this, is that because this is semi-complex, I have tried to articulate this in a way, because we have to do it, obviously, for the courts. I try to articulate it in a way that anybody can understand it, and you guys are even following now, right? It's not that complex. We want to understand all the different pieces, but nobody takes the time.
No, well, you just got to read what these sections are. You just got to read and understand what you're looking at.
Well, 24 years, all the lawyers, everybody got it wrong. And that's why, because nobody looked at why is this not working right. So what I did was I actually, and one of the things you should link is my Medium article. I sat down and probably wrote one of the most important documents of my life, which is explaining 230C, the entire section, how it works, how it failed, and how it can be fixed. It worked. I mean, it was ironic because I was publishing it simultaneously that when Justice Thomas actually published his thing, and it was like, you may as well have said the same thing, just in different words.
The funny thing
and
is,
I did link.
I was going to ask you to write something for us, like write something for Uncover DC that I can publish explaining all this.
Believe it or not, here's the thing. I kicked it out to Wall Street Journal, New York Times, because it's, not a partisan issue. Just send it out to whatever media. They come back to me and say, wow, this is really interesting, but we can't run it.
Well, I mean, I can run whatever I want.
I know. You will like this because it is a layman's explanation. It doesn't get into massive legalese, but it walks you through the misunderstanding and how to repair it. And the resolution will be that we will effectively fix the internet. I mean, the two most important things right in this world right now is one is the election, and secondly is this. It's probably the second most important decision in America right now is how do we fix social media, because social media is a problem.
Yeah, no, agreed. I mean, I think
it's dangerous.
If you were to ask people today, tell me if you agree, Frank, what your top three issues are, I think that people would say the election integrity coupled with it, social media censorship, and then maybe immigration in China or something like that. I mean, I really do think Americans are focused on that, well, at least the ones we know.
Oh, first of all, I would just keep reminding people how important social media has been to the political landscape, not only in the U.S., but in Europe for, I don't know, over here, it's since 2008. That was the first year that that social media really chose a president. And ever since the television media has lost all of their credibility, it has been about we have to go where the people are and we have to find a way to corral them back into our sphere here. And if the media is open, then it doesn't matter how many people, how many hundreds of millions of dollars are raised by these super PACs. They're not going to be in control of who elects presidents or prime ministers or anything like that. That's why Europe and the U.S., you have forces that are going after the information superhighway and trying to create a bottleneck.
Yeah.
Well, this is really great.
It's going to be an amazing thing when this all comes down to that, they're not allowed to develop information anymore. Things like authentic sources or prioritizing anybody, that's over. They're not allowed to do that without being responsible for what they're doing.
That's pretty amazing. And you can do that just with making sure that 230 is interpreted the correct way and the Supreme Court can set
correct.
The precedent. That's amazing. Well, listen,
yeah.
We're not done with you, sir, so you'll be back.
Been trying to get it out there to everybody. I mean, if you remember when we met, there was a reason I went up there as a headline speaker, because what I was saying, it's real. It's just, it is an insanely long fight through the courts. I mean, people don't understand. I mean, I'm millions deep in this lawsuit and I'm basically fighting all by myself. You know, we will get there eventually. I'm relentless. I just won't quit. So, I mean, we are now all the way at the top court in the land. And if they do this, if they hear this, we can fix everything, all of it.
Amazing. Pretty cool. I hope they do. I mean, what is it? I mean, they don't. They only have one side of the argument to look at to make the decision at this point because Facebook chickened out.
Yeah, I know. Oh, that was kind of funny. So, yeah, it's all in their hands now. And that's why we need a little bit of pressure on them saying, hey, look, we need to get this finished. Like, we need to be heard and we need to fix 230. But I think that they're already ready for it. I mean, if you read the Medium article, and I'll send that off to you and link that, and then read Justice Clarence Thomas's opinion. It's, I mean, substantively the same thing. It's amazing.
Definitely get that over to me so people can sit down and really digest what you're saying in a written form. And then we'll talk offline after this about, you know, whether or not we can publish something else that explains this as well for folks. Because, I mean, it's important and I wanted everybody to hear it. That's why I asked you to come on today after all this time. And I apologize. My fault.
It's okay. My fault.
I mean, it is. It's my fault. Like,
no, it's busy. I mean, you just had a house burn down. I mean, that was like, I remember messaging you, and then I got on your feed and I saw your house burn down. I was like, ooh, I feel really bad. I messaged you about that. Like, you know,
I think I answered. I think I answered you. I don't remember. I think.
That was funny. So now I'm hoping everything is well in your world, and that, you know, when there is an outpouring of help, it becomes help. You know, It's an amazing thing. It's been a long fight, and I'm starting to get some serious help from some serious players. So
good.
Wonderful. That's good to hear.
Yeah, great. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Jason. Appreciate you being here and everything
you're
doing.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
So there it was, a nice little interview with Jason.
Amazing.
And we got a lot to talk about on Monday already, and it's only Friday. So we're going to wrap it up for now. But I think it'll be a bumpy week. I mean, it's been bumpy every day, but let's see what happens this weekend.
Indeed. And I am looking forward to it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wait. Has Christmas shopping been completely impossible for you? I mean, obviously you had the fire, and I think that everybody's not going to be upset if you don't really go over the top with Christmas. But has it been impossible for you?
Impossible in what way? Physically impossible?
No, it's just, well, yeah, it's impossible for me physically. There's no places you can just go and walk around and get some ideas anymore. Everything needs to be done online. And even though I know that there are plenty of businesses with their stuff online, I don't know. It's not like you can go to an internet superstore unless there is. Is there a place you can go to that lists all types of stores that are online and the things that they do? A business directory like that?
I don't think so.
Because all I know is Amazon.
Yeah.
It sucks.
You know what's crazy too? If you like go to Walmart or something and order something online now to pick up at store, which is such a great feature, and you go in there, they have this massive like locker, like store. It's weird. You scan your barcode, and then from this massive tower, like the size, like God knows how high, down comes your package and out the chute.
I didn't know that.
You don't need to even do anything anymore. You could have it delivered to your car, but if it's something that you need to go in and pick up, you don't even have to go talk to anybody. It's in this storage locker thingy system. And like you literally scan your phone and it drops your package. It brings your package down from wherever it exists in this big labyrinth of packages, like an inventory system. And then you walk out of the store with it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I guess some people are innovating out there.
I'd much rather go up to a person in a small mom and pop shop and say, hey, I'd like to buy that from you. I've been really trying to frequent family-owned stores, small box stores, local, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I've been trying. And you know, there's a local store. There's like seasonal stores that pop up over here. I know that there's one place that used to be an old dance studio that every Christmas and every October, this one company or this one group of people will rent it out and they will just make it into a holiday bonanza place. And they're only there for about a month and then they're gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, Lauren and I actually were able to walk on in there with the baby 2 weeks ago. We thought that maybe we would be able to get the baby her first stocking, but it doesn't really matter. Because she's not going to get any real presents from us until maybe next year. She doesn't know what the hell's going on right now.
Like, yeah, I know, but it's her first Christmas, and you get her a little doll or train set, and then in pictures moving along, you see it, and then you remember that was your first Christmas. Look, we got you this scary doll.
Oh, yeah. There'll be something. There'll be something. But we looked at, we said, can we agree that we're not going to go over the top with Aurora this year? She goes, oh, yeah. She doesn't even know what the hell's happening. So, yeah.
Speaking of which, by the way, real quick, how did Pops do?
He got out of surgery last night at 9:39. I have not talked to him yet, but I'm going to FaceTime him after this. I think he should be awake, but, those are his doctors that have been handling him since his transplant years ago. So they've got a system that actually updates the family members in the middle of surgery to tell you how it's all going.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so that's how we knew everything progressed as planned, blah, blah, blah.
Good.
So we'll see what they saw when they were in there.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we'll keep praying for you. And
thank you.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val, and...
Beans! You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2:30 Eastern Time on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com until Monday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.